This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's Radio
Free
Radio.
We see a tremendous amount of cynicism across this country right now about politics, and people are frustrated that they don't feel that their votes count, that people are focusing on getting to vote against the parties they don't like rather than vote for something. One of the challenges of the Liberal Party over the past years is it's gotten disconnected from our grassroots, so it's so important for me that we recognize that at the very last biennial convention, the Liberal Party overwhelmingly adopted the idea of preferential ballot. The preferential ballot is it's a change that allows you to rank your preferences. So really like the you know, blue guy to win, but if not the orange guy's fine, or if not the red guy's fine, you can rank them how you like. That's the way we think and approach things. And what that will require is every politician cannot just play to his or her base. They have to reach out to be people's second choices and third choices. That will change the tone of politics completely.
Absolutely, I'm committed to changing that system, and so that's why I launched my campaign talking about electoral reform. But despite all of the wonderful words about the Liberal Party, which I agree with, and despite all of the enthusiasm and confidence that this time we can be government again, which I hope is true, Canada is too important to let Stephen Harper win the election in 2015. If he does that, we will not get electoral reform. If he does that, we will not reverse the undermining of our social safety net and other democratic issues that he's done. So we have got to get rid of Stephen Harper. And that's what my cooperation plan is all about. We build the party to lead again. And at the same time, we work with and we appeal to the 18 million Canadians who did not vote Conservative. We can have a progressive government in Canada. That's what Canadians want.
I understand your perspective and your passion on this, and I think it's great because there's a lot of Canadians really, really frustrated with Stephen Harper. But it's not enough to just replace Stephen Harper with somebody else. We have to replace him with a very, very clear vision of where we're going forward. What would electoral cooperation imply? What kind of values are we willing to jettison? We know that the middle class needs investment in trade and freer trade to create prosperity. The NDP is against freer trade. I'm not willing to give up our values for that.
Okay, Joyce. Justin, that all sounds very good, but I'd like to ask you, if you want to replace Stephen Harper, where's your plan? I have a plan for doing that. One-time cooperation in the ridings where he won with under 50% of the vote.
Welcome to episode 43 of Election Fallout, where the impact of the 2011 election has been contemplated and a progressive victory in 2015 has been plotted since the day after Stephen Harper won his strong, stable majority. My name is Tony Lofin, and on this show we will be joined by Liberal leadership candidate Joyce Murray, the standard-bearer for inter-party cooperation in the race to replace Bob Rae. That opening bit was an exchange between Joyce Murray and Justin Trudeau at the first leadership debate in Vancouver. In a few short words, they pretty much sum up the arguments for and against cooperating with parties that have similar fundamental values in order to oust a party with whom there can be no common ground. Will the Liberals elect a leader who would prefer to gamble that after the next election they will be found in principled repose on the sidelines, as the vast majority of Canadian voters do not vote for Stephen Harper yet re-elect him? Or will the Grits choose a leader who believes in a democracy that compromise on the road to power is not dishonorable? A leader who believes that a government of the three progressive parties cooperating would provide Canadians with something closer to liberal values than a government in which liberals do not participate? In recent history, this dilemma is not unique to the progressives of today. It was not long ago that the vote on the right was split, thereby marginalizing both the Reform Party and the Progressive Conservatives. We know how it worked out for them. They compromised, focused on shared values, and now hold this country in their collectively mailed fist. It is interesting to go back and visit a piece of writing called Our Benign Dictatorship by Prime Minister Stephen Harper and his mentor, Tom Flanagan. Yes, that Tom Flanagan. Here are a few excerpts from this contemplation on conservative cooperation. Although we like to think of ourselves as living in a mature democracy, we live, instead, in something little better than a benign dictatorship, not under a strict one-party rule, but under a one-party-plus system beset by the factionalism, regionalism, and cronyism that accompany any such system. Our parliamentary government creates a concentrated power structure out of step with other aspects of society. For Canadian democracy to mature, Canadian citizens must face these facts, as citizens in other countries have, and update our political structures to reflect the diverse political aspirations of our diverse communities. All of Canada's opposition parties are on single-handed crusades to drive the Liberals from office and form a majority government. The logic of this quest requires each party to distinguish itself from the others as well as from the government, further entrenching a fragmented party system. The Liberal elements of the PCs and the populist elements of the Reform both seem determined to take this risk in an emerging war of attrition between them. First-past-the-post voting encourages parties to engage in a war of attrition. Yet there is an exception to this Darwinian voting logic, territorial concentration, which has allowed smaller parties to survive in Canada despite this electoral system. In effect, territorial concentration has produced several regional two-party systems instead of a national two-party system. Both the Reform Party and the Bloc Québécois, or even the PCs, could go on for decades without ever becoming national parties, and through their survival as regional parties, they could prevent the emergence of a national Conservative Party. If cooperation is ever to work, the fragments of Canadian conservatism must recognize that each represents an authentic aspect of a larger conservative philosophy. Reformers will have to realize that there is something genuinely conservative in the Tory penchant for compromise and incrementalism. Tories will have to admit that compromise, to be honorable, must be guided by underlying principles, and that reformers are not extremists for openly advocating smaller government, free markets, traditional values, and equality before the law. We do not have to change too many words in order to translate Harper and Flanagan's argument to apply to cooperation between progressive parties. For fun, let's do it in the last passage that I just read there. If cooperation is ever to work, the fragments of Canadian progressivism must recognize that each represents an authentic aspect of a larger progressive philosophy. NDPers will have to realize that there is something genuinely progressive in the Liberal penchant for compromise and incrementalism. Liberals will have to admit that compromise, to be honorable, must be guided by underlying principles, and that NDPers are not extremists for openly advocating bigger government, regulated markets, labor rights, and Keynesian economics. The language of compromise and cooperation sounds like music to my ears when I no longer hear it in the context of a blueprint by which Stephen Harper gained control of this country, but rather as a means for progressives to take it back. So, without further ado, let's hear from Joyce Murray. Hi, Joyce. Thanks for taking the time to speak with me today.
Hi, Tony. I'm happy to do that from the wet coast here in Vancouver, where it's been raining solidly for days.
Okay. As much as I like Trudeau, when I first heard you, a sitting MP, were entering the Liberal race to advocate for inter-party cooperation, you had my vote immediately.
Oh, well, thank you very much. And as you know, in our system, you don't have to be a Liberal Party member to vote.
Mm-hmm. That's great, because cooperation kind of targets those people, right, that aren't necessarily partisan Liberals, but definitely want to put defeating Stephen Harper as their first priority.
Well, and I'm a strong Liberal, but I'm a Canadian first, and mm-hmm. So I think it is the conviction of many Canadians that we have to ensure that we don't have a Prime Minister Stephen Harper after the 2015 election, and so that's really what my that's what my proposal is based on, and the ability to then make some changes to our electoral system after the next election to make sure we don't have these abuses of democracy and this lack of representation that's
exactly
happening now.
I think that electoral reform is a good enticing factor for the three progressive parties to this once cooperate
in order mm-hmm. in order to get those. And I see from your policy statements on your website that you're not making a specific proposal for electoral reform, but you'd like to have a royal commission to consult with Canadians as to what kind of electoral reform they'd like.
Yes, I'm not the kind of leader who feels that she has all the answers. What I am is the kind of person who likes to bring people together to come up with the best possible solution. So, Tony, you know that I was a minister in the BC Liberal government that put together the citizens assembly on electoral reform out here in BC.
Okay.
So we had a process that went on for a couple of years, and that had essentially a randomly selected jury of citizens, two from every constituency, who had a year to study systems and come forward with a recommendation. And they did hearings right across the province, which helped educate people also about electoral systems. Mm-hmm. Now, I am not proposing that methodology, but I learned a lot about the process of including people to consider a new electoral approach. And so I recognize some of the complexities in this issue, of course, some of the strong differences of opinion. Yeah. And I would say not necessarily a royal commission. It could be like a blue ribbon panel. We do need a process.
Right.
We do need to include the public. We need to consider the other alternative electoral mm-hmm. systems, but we also need to consider whether there should be a made-in-Canada system that reflects our unique extensive
yeah,
geography.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of Canadians will take comfort in the fact that they have the option of voting for a leader of the Liberal Party who has, as one of her first priorities, to consult Canadians, as mm-hmm. we are living in a time where our democratic institution and our democratic processes are under siege by the Conservative government. So,
yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And when people distrust government, as is happening now, and feel not represented, but also feel that they can't count on a government to be acting in the public interest and instead it's acting in some private interest or ideological interest, that apathy is very damaging for democracy
mm-hmm.
because it means people disengage further and then that entrenches the very problems and actually rewards the very abuses that are taking place.
Yeah, I think apathy is the exact wrong response to what Stephen Harper is doing. I think people should get activated, and I think people should look at each other. I have many friends in the, like, I'm a pragmatic progressive with no real party loyalty, although I will belong to any party that gives me a chance to vote on something. So I voted for Nathan Cullen in the NDP leadership race, and I promptly tore up my card getting ready to vote for Justin Trudeau until you, of course, joined the race to carry the cooperation torch.
Well, I welcome your vote, Tony. Thank you very much.
Now, your ideas regarding cooperation are slightly different than Nathan Cullen's. Could you elaborate on them for me?
Well, I have to say that I was aware of Nathan's interest in this, but I didn't read his material, so I don't actually know the detail. I can describe what I'm proposing, and I know there are differences. One of the keys from what I've proposed is that I will first talk with Liberals about this before moving forward, because from democracy, it's not just what you do, it's how you do it, and it is the market. Democracy is the marketplace of ideas. If I can't do that in my party, I can't be trusted to do it for Canadians. So whatever I do as a leader of the party will demonstrate the principles of inclusion and consultation. So first I'll consult with the party. I know that there is a strong appetite amongst many Liberals for this. Secondly, I've said that Tony, I don't know if your listeners know what this cooperation is about, so maybe I'll just go back and say what it is would be to take the 10 to 15% of ridings where the Conservatives won by a squeaker because of the split in the progressive vote.
Right.
And you can think, for example, of Boris Ranewski's MP, who lost by 29 votes. And then it turned out there was a lot of there was a lot of funny business going on, not just the illegalities of voter registration, but a number of other layers of abuse in his constituency, and he lost by 29 votes. Or we can look at Calgary Centre, where there was a split, and the Conservative won by about 36% of the vote.
Yeah,
not a very representative outcome. So those 10 to 15% of ridings are the ones that we're talking about. Not every riding in the country. So the second factor is that it would be so in those ridings, I would encourage the work towards having a cooperation. And the way I'd imagine it is this: every progressive party would nominate their own candidate in that riding. I mean, let's talk Calgary Centre, for example. So you would have a nominated NDP, a nominated Green candidate, a nominated Liberal candidate. It's not a merger. It is not a coalition of Democratic, of progressive candidates. It would be each party would have their own candidate, and then there would be a primary-style race among those candidates.
Okay.
Yep. The winner then would be the progressive candidate for that riding to run against the conservative.
Yeah, I see some advantages in that over Nathan Cullen's plan, which was strict joint nomination. So at the riding level, they would get together and figure out who's going to run to hold the progressive flag. Now, one of the things people would say, well, I want a chance to vote for my party. Well, in your plan, people would have a chance to vote for their party.
That's right.
Maybe twice.
That's true. They would vote to nominate a party representative. They would then vote for that representative in the primary runoff. But just as you have in the United States, in the Democratic primary, for example, you vote for your candidate. It was Hillary Clinton versus Barack Obama, and then whoever is the progressive candidate, then the Democrats came together behind that candidate. I mean, some would have perhaps stayed home because they were convinced that Hillary Clinton would have been a better progressive candidate in the final election for president.
Yeah.
Maybe they stayed home, but they did have a chance to voice their preference and to work towards having their candidate be the one running in the final race.
I think that in a democracy, the more opportunities you have to vote, and the more opportunities you have to vote smart, I think the better. You know.
Well, within reason.
Yeah, people want to vote.
Some
people
particularly want an election every year, but yes, I think people having a chance to vote to support a candidate of their choice is important, and my mechanism would allow that. One of the other additional aspects is that I would work with the other progressive parties that were involved with this and discuss the possibility of, should there be an election in which the conservatives win a small minority and the other parties could cooperate in a form of a coalition.
Exactly.
The way we're seeing in Britain. Perfectly normal, legitimate part of our parliamentary democracy. Another place where our prime minister shamefully mounted a campaign to misinform and miseducate our voting.
Exactly.
Canada, when Stéphane Dion and Jack Layton proposed a coalition. And it's that kind of abuses of our system that is so egregious and means we have got to act.
Yep.
And in this situation with a majority, we have to cooperate to act, and that's the basis. So I think we talk about the potential interest in coalition before the federal election so that we actually have a chance as progressive parties to undo the damage that Stephen Harper has done.
You know, I think the mainstream media helped Stephen Harper propagate a myth that coalition governments are illegal under our system or something.
Yeah, you know no, I mean? It was completely. I mean, it was such an abuse of power. It was such a good example of why we have to have change, and people felt powerless to get their voice out about the fact that was simply not true. It was a lie.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I think there's a lot of Canadians out there that be they Liberal or be they NDP would have no problem with a Prime Minister Joyce Murray with Deputy Leader Thomas Mulcair or vice versa, you know?
Well, or Elizabeth May.
Yeah, okay. I mean,
yeah. No, so I think we talk about that before the election. People know, they know that is a legitimate potential outcome depending on mm-hmm. the voters. And of course, the power is in the voters' hands. Right now, with our current system, the power is not in the voters' hands.
Exactly.
The power really is in the hands of a prime minister who is willing to breach conventions of our democratic system, go far over the line in terms of a whole range of governing tools and processes.
Yeah.
Think omnibus budget bills, for mm-hmm. example.
Well, I think our first past the post system is such a disaster, and it really fosters this hyper partisan insanity. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. And Tony, may I comment that some of the detractors of my plan are saying, well, first past the post worked for the Liberals when they were majority government, and so why is it suddenly not working now? And I have to remind people that nothing stays the same. Things have changed, and one of the things that have changed is the politics of our neighbors south of the border. So the U.S. is a place where hundreds of millions of dollars a year are donated to political Republican think tanks, right-wing think tanks, who figure out tactics, tools, and propaganda approaches to essentially get a result, to frame issues in a way as to have them be black and white.
Oh yeah, no, the conservatives have really used the resources of the private sector to turn politics into a whole different ballgame. And
exactly.
They're going to be hard to compete with on that level.
Well, and so that is a change from 20 years ago.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
As you said, the conservatives here are using those tools and techniques and expertise that comes up from the United States is based on hundreds of millions of dollars of effort to advance the cause of the right wing and the Tea Party.
Exactly.
And so we just don't have the same playing field as we used to, and mm-hmm. we have to take action on that.
Yeah. Now, you come at the idea of cooperation from a whole different angle than, say, I would. Like, we both advocate it. But you're in a position where you may be able to engineer cooperation amongst party leaders. I'm stuck talking to my friends. You know what I mean? So,
nothing is more important. I mean, who's to say what is the most... important action or thought. I mean, think about a young girl in Pakistan who, on the ground level, decided that she wanted to go to school, and she has rocked the world.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would never judge whose actions or whose position is the most important mm-hmm. to influence
the difference,
to the good.
Yeah, the difference. Thank you. And the difference that I see in this is, I put, like, I intend to vote for you. I put my hopes into the idea that you can engineer cooperation that will be designed to defeat the conservative government. But failing that, because I have no control over whether or not you can do that other than voting for you and helping your campaign, in the event that fails, I mean, I like to talk to my friends about strategic voting. You know, if there's not going to be a jointly nominated candidate, then I like to think about strategic voting. And I know the arguments for and against that, and it's been done to death, but the one thing that I rarely hear people talk about is riding level polling, making that available to voters. It doesn't need Thomas Mulcair's consent. Do you know what I mean? It just mm-hmm. needs a couple of interested people at the riding level who are going to do the polling and make it public. I'll tell you a little story about election day in 2000, the last election day. in my riding, Nipissing to Miskaming, the margin of victory for the conservative was 18 votes. We had a fantastic MP. I mean, nobody has a bad thing to say about Anthony Rota here in Nipissing. Okay, mm-hmm. He was widely regarded as a shoo-in, but on the morning of the election, I encountered one of his campaign workers getting coffee, and this guy told me that it's too close to call. And I was shocked. I was, what do you mean? He said, we're door knocking and it's too close to call. The outlying areas are bitter about the gun registry, you know, because we have a town of 50,000 people and then a whole bunch of outlying areas, like more rural, you know, areas.
Right.
They hated the gun registry, which, I mean, I think, don't get me started on that. I think it's ridiculous to hate that, you know.
Yeah.
Another
example of the power of expert propaganda.
Yeah, yeah.
To poison the debate and mm-hmm. to take away the marketplace of ideas.
Yeah. See, now, I don't think that anyone going into the voting booth that day, regardless of how they were going to vote, really thought that Anthony Rota wasn't going to win.
Mm-hmm.
That having been said, if polling information was available to people, I mean, I think there might have been a little bit of strategic voting, at least a couple of dozen. Like, we had a very strong Green Party candidate who garnered more than double their normal support. And of course, mm-hmm. the Orange Crush was going on, you know, the media manufactured a love of Jack Layton out of nowhere, and the NDP did very, very well, you know?
Unfortunate set of factors, yeah.
Yeah, and then that was the perfect storm that unseated that Anthony Rota. And mm-hmm. I mean, no one really knows. He's playing his cards pretty close to his chest, but I think that he's going to run again.
Well, I hope he does. You know, Anthony, of course, it was our caucus chair.
Yeah.
And so I have the same admiration for him as you're expressing. And it was a shock to find out that he hadn't won.
Yeah.
So, Tony, I think that it is... I think it's legitimate for people, for voters, to think about how they're going to... what kind of information they would need to be able to vote strategically. I have to say that's not what I'm putting my attention on right now.
Yeah.
I mean, and yes, strategic voting does take place in my riding. The NDP vote is not huge, and one of the reasons is they're very aware that this riding has historically been a strong conservative riding or a liberal riding, and so a number of the other progressive voters, party's voters, have looked at my platform and seen my commitment to environmental sustainability and to social issues, and
absolutely.
Said, we'll vote for Joyce. We don't want to risk having a conservative win that seat.
Exactly.
And that happens in different ways in different ridings, and mm-hmm. I think that's a normal part of our system. And I don't think there's anything to stop organizations from taking the pulse of a riding and doing what they can to spread the word. The one caution I would have is that polling can be very wrong, as we saw in the Alberta leadership race that I think Alison Redford was polled at being 17 points behind, you know, a matter
true
of
that,
hours before the actual
yeah.
vote. And the other thing is that polling can be abused, because it's possible to do a question that is leading and do a poll that's not as rigorous as it needs to be.
Those are very valid concerns about my idea, for sure.
Yeah,
Just really quickly on the fundamental nature of your platform, I really think that some of the elements of it are designed to reach outside of party lines and pull in supporters who might be interested in, say, legalizing marijuana or price on carbon, whichever form that takes.
Yes, that is part of what I'm trying to do. And I mean, frankly, when I'm part of a party that just lost another 30 seats, mm-hmm. we'd be crazy not to try and reach outside.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the Liberal Party did a historic opening up of our party a year ago by changing the constitution such that non-liberals can be part of selecting a new leader. I mean, that's unprecedented in any party in Canada, as far as I know.
Absolutely, and I really respect.
Yeah, it means your listeners, as long as they are not card-carrying members of another federal party, have the right to go onto my website, which is joycemurray.ca. So here's my little pitch.
Yeah.
And sign up as a supporter, and then that will make them eligible to register to vote. But the deadline for that sign up is somewhere just around the end of February. So
okay, yeah. So people better
get
cracking on that
as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you a couple of comments on the rest of my platform, I felt that the leadership race is a time to be specific about some things that I believe in, because frankly, it's no easier to take controversial specific stands when you're actually leading the organization than it is when you're in a race to lead it. In fact, it's harder then. So anybody who doesn't want to turn off a few voters by being clear about what they're looking to do is maybe unaware that it's going to be even harder if they should become the leader. So
mm-hmm.
I am for the legalization, taxing and controlling cannabis for the simple premise that right now there is a regulatory monopoly on cannabis that's held by organized crime.
Yeah.
And so it's organized crime that garners the profits. It's organized crime that controls who it's sold to. And let's be clear, it's available in kindergarten, in elementary schoolyards. It's very available to people it shouldn't be available to.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no quality control. It can be cut with more addictive drugs. So my contention is it's government that should have the regulatory control over this product, just as they do on tobacco and alcohol.
Oh, yeah. Just imagine the revenue that it could generate to spend on such things as healthcare, education, cut the deficit. You know, it's
addictions, prevention, youth programs, all of those things.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
And right now, we're letting that money go to criminals, and it's a shame because
yeah.
I mean, anyone who's at all connected to reality understands that marijuana is far from the most dangerous drug that people do. And it just should be legalized and controlled by the government and taxed. I really appreciate you representing that issue in this leadership race as well.
Well, thank you. Thanks,
yeah.
Tony.
Now, just real quick, as someone who enjoyed a 7-year tree planting career in BC, I really respect your involvement in that industry.
Okay. So you're a tree planter.
Yes, I am.
It's once a tree planter, always a tree planter.
Absolutely. The most life changing experience that I've ever had. And I credit that experience for making me who I am today. And when I found out that you're heavily involved in that industry, I was really glad, and I respect that.
Well, Tony, you know that I planted 500,000 trees myself.
Yeah.
So aside from building a business that employs people to plant trees, I was a tree planter for a number of years to earn tuition for my university.
Yeah, and me too. And I respect anyone who could put on those bags and pick up that shovel and earn their money in doing that.
Do you mind if I just let your listeners know the one key thing about tree planting is, well, there's two real things. One is you're out in the bush, whether it's Ontario or Alberta or British Columbia or Quebec. So you have a wilderness experience and you're connected with nature and repairing the impacts of the forest industry and forestry.
And when you plant as many trees as you have, Joyce, you can
yeah.
never, you your carbon footprint is a net negative for the rest of your life.
Well, I don't think that way. I try and walk or bus. But the second really key thing about tree planting is that you earn based on your work and your production. And I think
mm-hmm.
that is such a valuable life lesson for young people.
Absolutely.
Because you go out there, it's tough work, there are bugs, it could be sleet, rain. And if you don't work, you don't earn much.
Exactly.
I mean, you earn minimum wage. And so
yeah.
that is such a huge life lesson about you. What you put in is going to determine what you get out.
Exactly.
So that, yeah.
You
so
know,
I really like that about the industry.
Right on. Well, Joyce, thank you so much for joining me today. And from one tree planter to another, I really hope you become the next Liberal leader.
Well, thank you very much, Tony, and let's work together towards a sustainable society for Canada in all senses of the word.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks a lot, Jess.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I've always been sold on cooperation, but as a result of this conversation, I'm also sold on Joyce Murray, the person, and her platform in general. Every progressive person in this country has a decision to make, and in my opinion, we should be learning a lesson from the conservative success story. There are ideological differences within their ranks that rival those between the three progressive parties. However, their differing viewpoints contend with one another within an organizational framework that maintains power in this country. Wouldn't it be nice if NDP, Liberals, and Greens could advance common elements of their agenda and hash out differences while governing? It seems to me that in order to make an argument against such a scenario, you would need to believe that people who do not agree with you do not deserve a voice in government. Again, I'd like to quote Prime Minister Stephen Harper, who eloquently sums this idea up in the final passage of Our Benign Dictatorship. Voters on the left are as much entitled as voters on the right to effective elected representation. Electoral reform might well revive the left. It could, for example, lead to cooperation between the NDP and the left-leaning wing of the Liberals, perhaps producing a national social democratic vehicle with a genuine chance of governing, or at least participating in a coalition cabinet. Of course, none of this can be foretold in detail. Political change always produces unexpected and surprising consequences. But we believe there is a good reason to think seriously along these lines. In today's democratic societies, organizations share power. Corporations, churches, universities, hospitals, even public sector bureaucracies make decisions through consultation, committees, and consensus-building techniques. Only in politics do we still entrust power to a single faction expected to prevail every time over the opposition by sheer force of numbers. Even more anachronistically, we persist in structuring the governing team like a military regiment under a single commander with almost total power to appoint, discipline, and expel subordinates. Among major democracies, only Great Britain so ruthlessly concentrates power. Thanks for checking out Election Fallout on oppositionradio.com and the Rabble Podcast Network at rabble.ca. I will leave you now with Cooperation Time by Joyce Murray's son, Baba Brinkman.
Joyce Murray is going to be a great leader of the Liberal Party of Canada. She makes it childishly easy to support her ideas.
Politicians have got to know we want cooperation. Stephen Harper has got to go. Together we can make him.
Well, it's about time a visionary leader decided to put the country ahead of the party line and invite the other progressives inside the big tent and reach across the divide. I mean, I got Green friends, NDP friends, and no, we're not always in complete agreement, except when we're all in complete disagreement with Stephen Harper and just wanted to feed him. I'm not vegan, but I can eat with them. I don't smoke weed, but I believe in the freedom not to go to prison for smoking. Plus, we can take the money from criminals and put it where it's needed, like healthcare. End corporate welfare and stop subsidizing filth in the air and put a price on carbon. It's a choice, but the person with the plan to make it happen is Joyce.
Politicians have got to know we want cooperation. Stephen Harper has got to go. Together we can make him. Politicians have got to know we want cooperation. Stephen Harper has got to go. Tell a fellow Canadian.
So how do I know? 'Cause she's my mother, and sometimes as a kid I would fight with my brother, and she would separate us like, boys, why suffer? Combine efforts, stand beside one another and you'll be stronger. She finds common ground while the guys just wanna fight and chest pound and act like adolescents. Her track record is battle tested. She's ready without a question. Plus she's got a vision, a 7-generation sustainable society driven by innovation. An immigrant with a master's in business administration. She's a quintessential Canadian with a plan. You want substance? Well, hers has the most. It's time to say goodbye to first past the post. I know you want to vote to reflect your voice. Well, that'll happen if you just support Joyce.
Politicians have got to know we want cooperation. Stephen Harper has got to go. Together we can make him. Politicians have got to know we want cooperation. Stephen Harper has got to go. Tell a fellow Canadian.
So calm. call me a mama's boy if you wanna, sure. I'm just proud of my mom, aren't you proud of yours? Mine is gonna be prime minister one day, so maybe I'll be next, in spite of my resume. But I won't really be ready until my late 40s. Good thing she's ready now, no need to wait for me. Yeah, she's got supporters, but she still needs more. So tell a friend if you agree with the chorus. It goes, politicians have got to know, we want cooperation. Stephen Harper has got to go, together we can make him. Politicians have got to know, we want cooperation. Stephen Harper has got to go. So tell a friend about Joyce Murray.